Joined this afternoon by Mike Marini, team manager for HMD. Sir, first off, how are you? Enjoying a rare kind of day off?
It's just a day off because they make us have a day off every now and then. back on the track tomorrow, I guess, pending any rain.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that plays out tomorrow morning when we get up. But day off, yeah. Just I know it's Friday, Saturday races are difficult because you don't really feel like it's Sunday, and then it's yeah. Straight into Monday again. So here we are.
So for those who don't remember, you know, last time we talked, you're still, you know, team manager, you're in charge of all nine, is it nine, right?
Yeah, so yeah, it's, well, I'm actually the general manager. AJ Smith okay. is the team manager at the shop, but when it comes down to the business side and dealing with the series and the parents and the contracts and lawyers and payments and stuff like that, that's where I come into play.
All the fun stuff.
Yeah, fun.
So with nine cars and kind of, you know, having, I'm guessing, some work on the IndyCar side, let's start with a simple question. Do you ever get to sleep?
No. Not during race season anyways. So you know, I always, my wife and I joke a lot. It's like in December, I feel bored, right? You know, get up at 6 or 7 and, you know, lollygag through the day, and then you get into March and your alarm's set for 4:30, and then the kids go to bed at night at, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock, and you're back on your computer until 11. But it's just part of it. I mean, it all averages out in the end. It's just right now it's, you know, difficult. It's busy. Not to mention the new shop and, you know, all that stuff that's coming through the pipeline for us. So it's, and I run my own business as well. So just, you know, everything adds up, but it's good in the end. I'm not complaining.
Good.
So you guys are obviously, I mean, having some success, especially in Indy Next right now. How are you feeling sort of about the progress of the team? Obviously it's a big task to take on as many drivers as you have this season, but it seems to be going relatively smoothly so far.
Yeah, I think for us at the beginning of the year, we you know, we anticipated some growing pains, I guess you could say, having 9 engineers and or 10 engineers, I guess now, and a couple DAGs work together. That was the biggest fear. You know, a lot of engineers sometimes have their own way of doing things and their own thoughts, but it's really been pretty seamless. We're actually established some good programs where they're all working together, all communicating together all the time. And I'm actually in those conversations or in those chats. So I see everything, which helps me go to, you know, drivers and their families and their partners and say, look, this is, you know, this is what we're doing. This is what's going on. So yeah, it's been good, you know, on that sense. You know, again, it is 9 drivers. It is 50% or 46% of the field. So, you know, when one driver wins or one driver is leading the points, and then he's running around in fifth or sixth one race, and there's a driver in front of him, you can't ask that driver to move out of the way because they're, you know, they're in the same program and same race that we are. So the biggest thing we keep telling everybody is, listen, whether you're 9 drivers under the tent or 2 drivers under the tent, if there's 18 drivers in the field, you're still racing 18. We try to have the one rule, which was in effect before Barber, but came into more of effect after Barber, is the only rule we have is don't hit your teammate at all costs. So yeah, we just try and, you know, implement stuff to keep everybody going. Our goal is we want to finish 1 through 9. We don't care which one of them wins, but we just want to finish 1 through 9 and, you know, start establishing ourselves for next year as well.
You have kind of an interesting thing going on with Josh Pearson missing, you know, a handful of races for WEC, and Toby Sowery stepping in. How did that, you know, from your standpoint, did you guys reach out to Toby and say, hey, you know, we've got a couple races that are probably open, and, you know, can you make the trip overseas here?
No, I mean, Toby he's, you know, he's like a lifer for HMD, right? He was the guy who scored the first team win back in 2019. So I don't remember exactly how it came up. I do know that his manager, or the person that was helping him out, who is, I won't mention names, but Indianapolis and European based, he came and asked me if there was a potential of a driver joining the program. And I said, yeah, I mean, we always have potential. It just depends on, you know, where we are in the season and what's going on. And he said, you know, well, that driver is Toby Sauer. And they're like, whoa, well, that's more than just a person, right? That's a driver.
Sure,
you know, let's talk. And then, it came to, you know, what certain races were available, and they didn't quite have the budget for the full season. I know he's trying to line up some stuff for next year, you know, in bigger programs. So any way that we could help out, we said, hey, we would love to. And it came to about where, you know, where Josh was missing these three races and Toby had budget for three or four races. So we said, well, would you be interested in doing this? And it happened pretty quick. I mean, it was a few emails back and forth with the manager. And I actually thought at first, I'm like, this is a, I didn't want to say a scam, but this is like, this is never going to happen. Right. Like, it's just
too easy.
I haven't even talked to Toby, and I mean, I know his mom and dad. So it was a little bit too easy. And then it all came out, and then they asked for the contract, and I was like, whoa. And then they asked for the invoice. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess we're racing. And he wasn't even over here. Where he was at the time was out of my, you know, I don't know, but I know he raced the Radical World Finals in November. Yeah. I, through my other business, had some people there, and they kind of knew who he was. So when he came to the shop in Indy and got, you know, fitted for the seat and fitted for the car and stuff like that. I mean, when we went into Barber, it was zero testing, not one single lap. He sat in the car in the shop and literally met his engineers, took his hand, and they went to work. So for him to do what he did, I thought was pretty, you know, pretty good. I know he ran a different car during the test at Mid-Ohio because of Ernie and you know, broke his wrist.
Yeah.
So he was in that car, the Force Indy car, just for the day. There was a new engine in that car, so kind of wanted to make sure it got on track and make sure everything was good for that. But also for his sake, it was an extra day in the car leading up to Detroit. So I think in Detroit, I think you'll see an even better Toby in Detroit. Only reason why is he's a little bit older, a little bit more mature than some of the drivers that are in the series. He has a little bit more experience. And it's an equal and level playing field for everybody. I mean, everybody tested at Barber but Toby. So now we're going to a street course that nobody's been at. So it's and it's a new layout, new location, new everything. So I think you'll see a Toby that's maybe even further up the grid there.
So switching gears just a little bit, I wanted to get your story about sort of how you came to join HMD. I know you've been there since sort of the beginning, since it shifted from BN Racing in 2019, but obviously you've mentioned your other business a few times too. So how did you sort of take this HMD role on in addition to the RTD job that you do?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I've known Henry and the Malukas family ever since David was 7 or 8 years old racing go-karts. I had my own karting team for a while. We had, you know, I had worked closely with the Weldons and Dan Weldon specifically. We were, you know, in the process of starting an elite level karting program. I continued on with those ideas just on a much smaller scale. Obviously, I didn't have, you know, the money and the funding to do all that kind of stuff. You know, as we rolled through karting into 2016-17, the political side of that got a little bit too much. And, you know, people started kind of undercutting others. And it was just a matter of, like, you know, to make the same money that I was doing in 10 races with 10 drivers, I needed to have 12 drivers and do 15 races. So essentially, I was, you know, working, you know, 50% more and making the same amount of money. And I had to deal with more expenses and everything. And that's what I didn't quite realize at the time, being, you know, a little bit younger, that it was, you know, I saw the money coming in, but I never saw the money going out. So that was the, you know, the difficult side for me. So I went to Toronto, a few races for Henry. Toronto's my, you know, my hometown. I was born and raised just north of there, and kind of just helped out here and there where I could, and kind of gave Henry some, what I thought about the program. And you know, right after Toronto in 2018 or 2019, he asked me, are you willing to help some more? And I said, yeah, no problem. And you know, kind of just elevated from there. I mean, he's a great guy to work for. He doesn't need to do motorsports, right? He's got a very successful trucking company. And everybody thought he was just doing, you know, the team for his kid. And that was the fear of a lot of the people that worked there. So, you know, when we came in and started developing these programs and started developing, you know, more drivers and a winning program. And then when David moved on, the program continued to win, right? It was then Linus was winning, and now we're in this year and there's 9 drivers. So they kind of got that, that feeling now that people are more attracted to the program, that the son is gone, the son of the owner is gone, and the program is still there. And there's obviously with the new shop, there's bigger and better plans for the future as well. When those happen, who knows? I mean, it's everything is about money and relationships in motorsports. So we'll continue to work those as much as we can. But I've become actually pretty close to the Malukas family between like on the radio with David for the IndyCar races now. Henry's basically given me the keys to the business side of HMD Motorsports Indy Next program. I speak with him every single day. I deal with Diva, his wife, every single day on the accounting side of it. So they're well in tune, but I guess you could say I'm their eyes and ears within the program.
So I had an Indy Lights question, but I'm going to save our
Indy Next Indy question. Next. You got to put a dollar in the jar.
Yeah. Listen, Frenchie can count. I still get it wrong, like pretty much every week at this point, but as you're on the radio with David and you've seen him in the last year and a quarter in IndyCar, how have you seen him, grow as a driver from, St. Pete 2022 until, the GMR this weekend?
Yeah, actually back up to 2020. Yeah. So David led the one and only practice session in 2020. Snotty nosed little kid leading an Indy Lights back then, Indy Next session now. And he was like motivated that year. And I mean, the big thing is like Henry and I talk about this all the time, is what happens if that season went forward and David wins the championship and he's an IndyCar at a young 17, like a very young 17.
Yeah.
The year off to do FR, then the next year of Indy Next, and then a move to IndyCar. I think that actually helped him more than hurt him.
Sure.
People are always anxious to move up, but it's what you learned not moving up, I think helped him more than moving up. Sorry, I guess I'm just kind of lost my words there. But but a year of it, like you raced against Linus in FR between, they raced 18 races. Between the two of them, they won 18 races. So Linus obviously got the majority of them. Then the next year, David finished second in the next to Kirkwood. Kyle, who's having a great year at Andretti. And then Linus, the following year, helped us win the team championship and our first Indy Next championship. So for his growth, I think it started back in 2020. It didn't start when he got into IndyCar. But like St. Louis last year was a big thing for him, finishing on the podium. And his engineer at the time, Roth, who's now Scott Dixon's engineer, really, was a good, he was the best person probably to have in his corner at that time, because he was pretty much understanding, and they were more of best friends, I think you could say, than engineer driver. Ross moved on this year, and Alex is his engineer now. And he never really skipped a beat in Texas. He was, Lil Dave was battling at the front of the field, as he says. So, I think those two races in particular helped him, but also like this past weekend, he finished whatever he finished, maybe a total of 18 corners, 19 corners altogether. And he got hit from behind by a teammate. But I mean, those are the kind of things that help you grow. He shrugged it off. And I mean, the minute it happened and he was back in the motorhome or back in the garage, he was like, okay, now I'm in Indy 500 mode. So I think that David in 2020 wouldn't have been able to do that. I think he would have beat himself up about being in the wrong position at the wrong time and stuff like that. So, people say, he's still the youngest driver in the field. But if you talk to him on a regular basis, he's probably one of the most mature drivers, or he's definitely mature beyond his age.
Agreed.
So you obviously work pretty closely with Linus. You've mentioned him a few times, and we see that he's going to have a test here in an Indy car coming up not too long. What do you think about him? Like, makes him special, I guess, that he was the first one that won the championship for you guys in Indy Next. And what do you think would be his? I mean, what is Ray Hall, I guess, going to see when they test him? Are they going to be impressed? I think I'm guessing yes.
Yeah, I mean, but I know they tested him in Texas on the oval already. I think they were the way that when I spoke to Linus after the test, they were practicing a lot of things, like a lot of race runs. They were testing a lot of race runs. So he actually did, I think, like a race and a half or two races worth of track time in Texas, which is a lot for a test. So I think they were pretty impressed with his feedback and pretty impressed with, overall. I know it's the fastest he's ever gone in a car before. So that's obviously the very first thing that probably caught him by surprise as well. This is pretty fast. But then, 2 weeks later, or 3 weeks later, we had to do a Firestone test we had to do an Indy Next test for Firestone, and it had to be a non-championship driver. So we elected to put him in the car. Just because, I mean, the guy he deserves his shot. He rightfully went out and won the championship in probably one of the tougher fields, I would say, in Indy Next at the time. But just, he's in a position where funding is difficult. He's from Sweden, right? He doesn't have a lot of American.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!
Business connections, and I think that kind of that definitely hurts him on this side of the pond, I guess you could say. But I've never seen a guy work harder in his life than him to get into an IndyCar. I mean, he pounds the pavement at every IndyCar race. He's driver coaching Kiffin Simpson right now, so he's in front of the IndyCar team owners all the time. That's what helped him get this test with Ray Hall, was, you know, being relentless on the phone and emails and visiting the shop and stuff like that. So I think his time will come. I think it sucks that he's not in a car full time, and you don't want to ever see a driver get hurt. But I think if a driver does happen to get hurt or sick or, you know, can't do an event, I think he's prepared to do it. He's ready to do it. He's strong enough to do it. He's trained to do it. It's just a matter of giving the opportunity. And then, you know, I think for his sake, he needs to take advantage of that opportunity. How can he take advantage of it? And you know, what does he need to do to prove himself more? I mean, he proved himself by winning the championship. He proved himself to do a successful test. Now he just needs that race opportunity. I think when he does have that, it'll be a lot easier for him.
So on the Indy Next front, I got it right that time. Ernie Francis, you know, hurt his wrist in Barber, and it looked like he might like do an opening lap in practice or the race just to kind of get points, because, you know, he was sitting fourth in points, and obviously that didn't happen, for whatever reason, but he was fourth in points. How much has he grown as a driver from year one to year two in Indy Next, from what you've been able to see?
Yeah. So obviously with year one, they were a standalone team. It was one car effort. So very difficult to compete against, you know, four, five, six car programs, now eight car, nine car programs. So that was, I think, his major shortfall, I guess you could say. You can't just go buy data from a team, or you can't learn from other drivers in the program. So I think the switch over helped him right away. He was an Indy test, I think, at a fall combine. He was pretty decent, big improvement right away. Just by being able to watch other people's video and look at data and stuff like that. So I think that helped. The first two races of the year, he was consistent. Wasn't the fastest driver, wasn't the slowest driver, but he was able to stay out of trouble and move forward. And I think that bodes well for, you know, for his future. The kid broke his wrist on the first corner of the first lap at Barber and raced a 35 lap race. After a red flag, he went back out there. And I know they put some ice cubes on it during the red flag, like under his wrist to try and help him. And I scanned all the radios. I didn't even know any of this happened. He kept it very quiet.
Wow. Okay.
And then he came to Indy. He wanted to race. I mean, he got fitted for a carbon fiber brace. He had the surgery done. We had custom grips made for the steering wheel. There was a little bit of confusion on, you know, doing the first lap to try to get points and not. At the end of the day, you can't be cleared to do one. I learned something this weekend. You can't be cleared to start the race. You have to be cleared or not cleared. If you're not cleared, then you can't race. If you're cleared, then it's your decision whether you want to do one lap or not. So at the end of the day, he had to sit out. Sucks for him, but I think he'll be ready for Detroit. He got fitted for the car with the steering wheel and the braces on, with everything in place. So the plan is for him to compete in Detroit, He had a lot more movement on Saturday at the track than he did on Thursday at the shop. So I think he'll be, good to go.
Nice.
You go into a little bit of detail on the Dale Coyne connection. Obviously that's sort of, I mean, relatively new for you guys, but mm-hmm. I mean, you have the connection obviously in IndyCar, but what is it like in Indy Next? Do you guys have any technical relationship with Dale Coyne in that way? Or is it just kind of the connection of, you know, having the drivers be development for maybe future opportunities with Dale Coyne?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, Daniel Frost tested with Dale in Sebring earlier this year. There was an opportunity to have another driver maybe later on this year. I think the HMD brand in Indy Next is a growing brand. And I think obviously with David being part of the HMD family and taking that, you know, that brand to IndyCar is, you know, it just heightens the perception of the whole program. Have we learned some stuff from them? Have they helped us with some stuff? Yes, they have. We actually called on them last year for a few occasions on some certain things that maybe they could, that we weren't maybe doing efficiently. And they were able to help with that. For Dale, looking down in the Indy Next program, is he has his name on the Indy Next program right now. If he has an opportunity for a driver to move up, I mean, with Daniel Frost doing the test at Sebring and having a successful test, is there a way for him to filter into a car if a driver, you know, can't do a race? I think now he would probably be one of the more ready drivers because he kind of knows the car and knows the program. At the track, we're totally separate. I mean, obviously the IndyCar side and the Indy Next side are different. What we do a lot with is when we have partners or when drivers have partners that come to the program, we're able to show them around our program and, hey, this is the Indy Next car. This is what we do. But there's an Indy car over there. We can go look at that and we can show the differences. And you can't really buy that experience. And I think that's where we gain a lot of benefit. And on Henry's side, he does the same thing. It's like, hey, come look at my kid over here, but come look at my program over here. And he's able to, you know, pull those people together.
So I have one more. You know, the Indy Lights, Indy Next scholarship, you know, package changed. I don't want to say unexpectedly, but maybe a little bit unexpectedly after, or, you know, around the time when Linus won last year. So there's a little bit more prizes on a weekend by weekend basis and less to the season. Does that change, you know, from mm-hmm. your standpoint when you're budgeting out, you know, next season and you say, you know, this guy might be a, you know, championship contender? Does that change how you budget out, you know, a race by race type, you know, thing from the business side?
No. For us, we need, you know, we know what the cost price is on a weekend. We average our races out over the course of the season. So, okay. You know, people ask us, like, you know, you're racing in Indianapolis, that's cheaper than, or more affordable. I shouldn't say cheaper in racing in the same sense. Don't go, but that's more affordable than racing in California. And we're like, well, no, it's not. Cause we have the same people in Indy that we do in California. In Indy, we may have less hotel rooms and no flights or less flights. And in California, we have to fly in hotel, but I mean, we have rental cars and we have people, you know, sure. It's racing at home. I explained to Henry this weekend, racing at home is a lot more difficult than racing on the road. You got friends and family and guests and all these people that expect parking passes and suite passes and grandstand tickets. And I'd rather just race in Portland. And if somebody, you know, wants to come, they can get their own ticket and fly there and be in place. So, yeah. So to go back to your question, do we budget differently? No, it's the same price for everyone, the same price across the board. I think it's, you know, we want to win, right? So sure. We're always going to have and it's hard to say this, but you're going to have the driver who wins and you're going to have the driver who loses. Only one driver of the 20 that are in the field this year are going to win each race, or there's going to be one winner. So one of the sayings that I've come to use a lot is like, if winning was easy, the losers would do it. And, you know, they have 14 chances to do it. They have 14 chances to do it this year. In three races, there's been three winners. So we're on par with IndyCar right now, with five winners in five races. So that's pretty cool. That shows how diverse and how competitive the series is. But yeah, for budget sake, we need money coming in to cover the expenses going out. I mean, the engine leases and the tire bill, it's, you know, people look at the numbers and go, what are you guys doing? But it's just, I mean, it's built into the budget over the course of the season. So
cool. That's all I got, man. Well, I know you've got a little bit of a day off here, so enjoy it. You've got a busy week. Good luck with everything. And we'll talk again at some point this year.
Day off. I've had 24 minutes with you guys and 11 emails. So I better hit email every 2 minutes. So.
Wow. Nice. Well,
but no,
yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you again.
Awesome. Thank you.
See ya.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.